I'm Sylvester Jenkins, and you're listening to Cut to the Chase.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Cut to the Chase. This is your host, Gregory Proctor. Today, we will be featuring episode 55, which is entitled Max Out, Potatoes, Eggs, and Coffee. Now, everybody's going to go, Greg, you just in wild and out on this one. What do you mean, potatoes, eggs, and coffee? I've got a featured guest today that I'll tell you that, you know, not only did we hit it off from the moment that we talked, not only was there a kindling type spirit, someone that, you know, was very inspiring and someone that I could relate to, but he's a brother. And, you know, on top of that, you know, we haven't had too many brothers on the show. So, I mean, for me, this is an exciting time, you know, to basically bring forth that. We've got a large audience of women, and I respect the women that are out there. We love you very much. We continue to embrace the support that you're giving us. But today, I've got someone on the show that I think we're going to add some dimensions, some versatility to our program, and a little bit more diversity, and I'm really excited about it. So we're gonna kind of jump right into introducing our featured guests. So as we look deep into our featured guests, Sylvester Jenkins III, we find that he's a multifaceted professional, an author, a speaker who inspires in the next generation of leaders becoming game changers that lead to better and more achievements in life. Sylvester is a native of Columbus, Georgia, that grew up surrounded by gang, violence, drug-infested neighborhood, where as a young black man, the only expectation was to do basically one of three things: die, go to jail, or make it out by luck. Instead of becoming a product of his environment, he decided to choose a path of joining the military and invested in himself. Beating the odds with no luck, working hard and determination, he now calls himself a combat veteran, a college graduate, a self-published author, and a business owner. He recently retired from the Army as a first sergeant with 21 years of dedicated service in the U.S. Army, a combat veteran with multiple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. He's also accomplished measurable results under extreme pressure while leading a team of multiple personnel in dynamic, fast-paced, and hostile environments. During his career, he received multiple awards for performance and professionalism. He's a college graduate with an associate's and bachelor's in organizational leadership, currently working on his graduates in the same major, and a member of the NSLS, National Society of Leadership and Success. Sylvester certified in advanced and executive leadership. He's a best-selling author, having written many books: A Cure to Successful Leadership, Resiliency, Winning the Battle Within, and his latest book, The Compass. In 2019, Sylvester chose to become a speaker and created Rising to the Top, R2T, to help others become game changers that rise above their situation and achieving more by focusing in on leadership and personal growth to magnify their excellence. He's dedicated himself in sharing his universal blueprint in mental and physical success with young adults and youth. Sylvester glorifies and understands that no matter what you're doing, as long as you bet on yourself and put your best foot forward, the outcome is always reciprocated. It's always positive. He's also a husband, a father of four beautiful children. He's an expert leader who has empowered over hundreds of people by helping them reach their goals, both professionally and personally. And to my brother, I'll tell you, I first am honored because you are a military. Thank you for your service, very much like myself. I'm honored to have you on this program. I think you're doing some great work out there, not only in what you're doing as an educator, as an author, but also as an influencer. You know, that's one of the things that I want to kind of make sure we expand upon, because as an influencer, you know, we see a lot of things out there that sometimes are just facts, and sometimes they're fiction. And you're really laying out, you know, some great things out there. So, Sylvester, do you have any opening remarks for our listeners?
I just want to thank you for the opportunity. I'm very excited to be here today, Greg. I just look forward to indulging in conversation. I guess you can call this an episode in the man cave.
Hey, this may turn out to be many episodes. You just never know, you know. Well, certainly, like I said, it's an honor to basically to have you on the program. And I think the first thing we need to do is we probably need to kind of qualify or define what is max out, you know, potatoes, eggs, and coffee.
Well, maxing out is a acronym that I use. It stands for mindset, attitude, and execute. When you're thinking about max out, you max out your credit card, you max out when it comes down to certain things in dealing with speed, or in the military, whenever you take a PT test, you max out in that, or whenever you're working out, you max out on your bench press. So I created this this program called Max Out, which is called Maxing Out in Life. So it's a guideline in order to put you in the right perspective whenever you're dealing with adversity in any type of way, shape, fashion, or form. So when it comes down to the potatoes, the egg, and the coffee bean, you think about how everybody deals with adversity. So I believe there are three types of people in this world, and you're either the potato, the egg, or the coffee bean. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to adversity, let's say that adversity is hot boiling water. Mm-hmm. So you have a potato. So that potato, when you look at a potato initially, it's hard, it's strong. Mm-hmm. But when you stick it in that hot boiling water, what happens to it?
It
gets soft. It turns weak. Let's say that potato lost its job. Let's say that potato went through some type of hardship. And the next thing you know, their feelings, their emotions, everything they were dealing with, they went from this hard, stern person that was able to get the job done in any aspects. Now they become soft. They become weak. Mm-hmm. When you look at the egg, now the egg is already fragile from the start. Mm-hmm. But when you stick it in that adversity, which is hot boiling water, what happens to the egg? It hardens. Mm-hmm. So you think about, like, for example, when somebody goes through a divorce, or if they go through a huge breakup in a relationship, mm-hmm. or a loss of a loved one.
Right.
So when that egg is in that hot boiling water, the next thing you know, it goes from being soft to hardened. It hardens on the inside, same outer shell, but it's hardened on the inside. It turns bitter. Mm-hmm. Then when you have that coffee bean, you stick that coffee bean in hot boiling water. That same circumstance that brought pain, that coffee bean turns that boiling water for the best circumstances, and it turns it into coffee. Mm-hmm. So my advice to everybody is to always be a coffee bean and change your surrounding. You can't control the things that's around you. You can't control your environment you grew up in. You can't control the weather. You can't control coronavirus, mm-hmm. but you can control how you act whenever these things happen. You can't control your attitude, your emotions, how you react to a lot of this stuff. So that's the analogy behind the potato, the egg, and the coffee bean. But when you're talking about the maxing in life, so we go through great measures in order to reach great heights. So a lot of times when we think about our mindset, I know as far as me growing up, I grew up in a single parent home, low income. You know, I ran with gangs. Quick story about myself. I was an aspiring drug dealer. Mm-hmm. I was a gang member, and I was an occasional thief. Mm-hmm. I failed many grades throughout my school. Like the fourth grade, 10th grade, I failed senior year. Mm-hmm. And I can remember having a conversation with my English teacher. I wish I could talk to her today, but I don't know where she's located at. But having a conversation with her, and she was telling me in the hallway that I had failed the test, and that I didn't have what it take, and that I wasn't college material. Mm-hmm. So you can just imagine how that affected me, dealing with everything that I was experiencing in my childhood, and then also after what she told me, dealing with that. So me figuring I was just too dumb for college, I chose to join the military instead. Mm-hmm. And during my time frame in the military, I experienced hardship then too. I went through a divorce. I got in trouble on numerous occasions, received Article 15s, and was on the borderline of being chaptered out of the military. Mm-hmm. And but what I never put in consideration was my mindset when all these things were happening. During the time frame of all these situations happening, I fed into the belief that I was a failure. I fed into the belief that I wasn't nothing. Mm-hmm. And it was all because of what I heard or what I experienced during my childhood. But once I changed my mindset to believe what I wanted to believe as far as pursuing my goals and my dreams, say like your eyesight and your mindset is two different things. Your eyesight is what you see right in front of you. Mm-hmm. But your mindset is perceiving the things that you see. Say, for instance, like Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady, you can call out all the accomplishments that he had during his career. Super Bowl champion, MVP, all these great things about him. Mm-hmm. But what people fail to realize that Tom Brady was selected as the sixth round, that's the 199th pick, which means he was passed over by all 32 teams five previous times.
Right.
Tom Brady had the slowest time in the 40-yard dash for a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady was about to be cut by the Patriots, but they decided to keep him as the fourth-string quarterback, not the third, not the second, not the first, mm-hmm. but the fourth-string quarterback. But he never lost his mindset outside of what people thought about him. And outside of what people said about him, he always kept his mindset to the point of becoming the greatest quarterback to play the game of football.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But so, then when you go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead. I had a question, but you go ahead. Finish out your statement. My apologies.
So when you think about your mindset, like I said before, with your eyesight and your mindset, he kept his mindset on being the greatest quarterback, and he never lost sight of that. He kept going down that path, regardless of whatever adversity came his way, regardless of whatever situations he found himself in. He always kept his mind and his eyes on the prize.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great intro with regards to giving us a little bit of that history. And so, you know, one of my questions is, you know, we hear about a lot of, you know, these adversities and inner city problems and other various things that are going on. And like you said, you had an English teacher that approached you and said, you will never amount to anything. You will never succeed, so forth and so on. And just that notion of trying to reconcile that in your current personal environment and life, and being able to pull yourself together. At what point in your life did the light bulb go off? Was the switch encountered for you to say, I got to do something different?
So the switch went off for me when I became a father.
Mm-hmm.
I, like I said before, I grew up in a single parent home. So I never really grew up with that male image in my life. The closest thing I had to a father was my older brother and my grandfather. But that wasn't, you know, my older brother, he's only 7 years older than me. So he can't teach me too much. Mm-hmm. He can show me enough or, you know, some things, but he can't teach me the image that a positive of a male figure. So when it came down to me becoming a father, I said, I let everything go. I think the Bible said when I was a child, I spoke as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put those childish things away. And once I became a father, that's what I did. I knew I had responsibility. I knew I had an obligation. I had the opportunity to be a positive influence in my son's life. I knew I had to stepped my game up when it came down to becoming the image that I never saw. Mm-hmm. So it just, that's when the light bulb switched. And I was like, I couldn't figure out exactly everything that I needed to do. And I hit some bumps in the road along the way. So where I am right now, it's been going on for almost, I'd say about almost 15, 16 years now.
Right. Right. Very, very, very commendable. You know, so many people, in a lot of cases, like, you know, listening to your story, some people hit, you know, situational circumstances where when they go through so much tumultuous things that happen, you know, negativity in their lives and setbacks and so forth and so on, they tend to give up. And when they give up, some have a way, you know, as they say, get back on the horse, you know, pick themselves back up and move forward. And then in other cases, others, they tend not to continue and other things occur in their lives. And, we're certainly blessed that you, were able to find, you know, the opportunity and the strength within yourself to be able to move forward and look at, you know, the amount of lives that you're touching, you know, or have touched thus far based on your story and how you've chose to basically take all that negativity and really turn it into something positive. Absolutely. So when you were in the military, you know, your story talks a lot about, you know, the themes of multiple tours in Iraq and, you know, as those that don't know, for those of us that have been in the military, you know, there's a lot of pressure, you know, particularly when you're in a wartime situation, there's just so many dynamic things going on. And of course it is extremely fast paced. And if you're in a hostile environment, it's even more chaotic and crazier. So during that time in the military for you, was it known that, you know, you had your son back in the U.S. at that point in time, or did you have a son before you went into the military? Because, you know, it seems like if you're under extreme pressure and you're in a hostile environment and you're trying to get, you know, as they say, get your house in order, that's a lot of pressure to take on, you know, for oneself all at one time. Plus, you got to worry about surviving. So right. give us an idea of the timing of that.
So I've been on multiple tours to Iraq and Afghanistan, but mm-hmm. It wasn't until my third tour in Iraq that I had my son.
Okay.
But the previous tours, it was mostly dealing with just fulfilling the requirement of the job itself. I'm a soldier. I knew this time could possibly come around. I'm a complete every requirement to the best of my ability. That's what I signed up for. I'm here to defend and to serve. And during that time frame of being deployed, it is a hostile environment. You're constantly on guard 24/7. Like, you have to deal with the fact that it's a possibility that you can die. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that day, mm-hmm. like, no coming back. It's not like Call of Duty. It's not like any of these other video games where you get to restart the game. And if you die, you just get to get an extra man or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. I had my life on for 51 months total. If you count all my deployments, right. I had to deal with my life on the line. And making that transition, coming back home, you don't get an opportunity. What happens is you train for the next mission. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happens. You go into combat, you come back home, you train for combat. So you never get any real downtime in order to reintegrate with your family, in order to have that intimacy with your spouse, or to have the opportunity to actually invest in your children as you would like to as a parent. All that stuff is pretty much taken away. It's a huge sacrifice. And if I can speak about like what combat is no sleep. Sometimes you miss a meal. Sometimes the same roads that you might have lost a friend or a battle buddy on, you got to go back out there that next day and get right back to it. It's You don't have time to grieve. There is no time to grieve. If you grieve, who knows what can happen during that time frame? I lost a lot of friends. I lost a lot of counterparts. I experienced a lot during that time frame of dealing with those deployments. But and I mean not only during the time frame of being deployed, but coming back home to my family. Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. a lot can change within a year.
Yep.
A lot can change in a year. My son, I got three boys and one girl. Initially, when I went on deployment, my third deployment, I only had one child. Now I got four. I just went on my last deployment in 2018. Mm-hmm. So during that time frame, during my initial deployments, my older kids, who are now teenagers, they were little kids. So they didn't really have a strong understanding of daddy being gone to combat, that it's a possibility that he might not come home.
Right.
But when I went out this last time, it was totally different. Like, man, he's leaving. Will I get to see him again? Now I gotta, you know, really have that talk with him. I gotta really, you know, let them know that everything's gonna be all right. Try to influence them to the point where they'll have a strong understanding that, hey, this is my obligation. I signed up for this. This is how I'm able to take care of the family. I'm serving the country, you know, just giving them prep talks in order to put them in the right frame of mind prior to going. But during the time frame of me leaving, now my wife is a single parent.
Right.
My wife is a single parent. She's dealing with these kids on her own because we don't have family where we're staying at. And this goes for a lot of military families. They're not close to family members. So you got to have a tight network when it comes down to the people in your organization or your unit in order to continue to work together to work through those situations whenever that does come about.
Yep.
A lot of time, during that time frame, I'm calling back home to check on the family, how everything's going. My wife is dealing with her hardship with the kids. You know, they're not doing right at school. They're missing me. She still got her job going on in order to provide as well. Daycare, finances, all this stuff is coming into play during the time frame of you being in this environment. So it's a stressful situation, very stressful.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I can certainly relate with you. I know for a fact from my experience in wartime situations and dealing with combative areas. Of course, being in the Navy, we're on a boat, but certainly the separation and so forth and so on from the family is very hard. And you know, in my situation, at least with my first marriage, after being deployed for 6 months or so, I rocked back into Charleston, South Carolina, only to find out that we're at a point to where we're planning to have a child. And it was really shocking to me, because I was only 20, maybe 20, 21, still fairly young at that point in time in my life. And like you said, having to figure out, you know, how to get out of the child mindset or the youthfulness mindset and begin to start to consider that you're going to have somebody else that you have to look up to.
Right.
Unfortunately, the timing was not right. Good man above, you know, decided that, you know, the pregnancy was not going to continue. And, you know, she lost the baby, and, you know, going through those emotional stages, particularly being young, were very hard, you know.
Very difficult time.
Very, very difficult time, you know. And of course, being married as young as I was back then, you know, there's just a lot of things you don't know. Like, you know, you hit on a lot of hot buttons, you know, and a part of those is like, what prepares you for separation where, you know, when you're prepared to rely on your spouse because you've committed, you've taken the vows, you've taken the oath at the marriage ceremony. And then all of a sudden that person's gone. I mean, you know, that person is, you know, they're on the other side of the world. You don't know what they're doing. You don't know. I mean, you just really have to have faith and trust and respect and understanding and just hope that things continue to work out the way that they're supposed to. Right. And in my case, you know, after a couple tours, I don't know, I was on my third or fourth tour, there out of Charleston when I was on a ship, end up moving to Connecticut. And when I got back, from one of my sub tours, you know, I'd found that someone else had been living in my house, had found somebody else living, driving my cars. And, you know, God knows, maybe he's wearing my clothes, but you know, it's just one of those things where still being very young, you know, under the age of 25,
right,
having to just deal with all of life challenges. I mean, like head on. I mean, it's like, you know, being a Mississippi guy growing up, you know, some of those things you experience, some of those things you're kind of sheltered from because, you know, you're growing up in a Christianity type of environment. And if you do things wrong, you know, it's not only your neighbors and your parents whipping your butt, but, you know, you're in trouble with everybody.
Right.
And there was just so many things that, you know, I said to myself, you know, back then that, wow, you know, I wish I would have known. I wish I would have had some insight. I wish I'd have had just a, you know, someone sit down and kind of walk me through some of these things to kind of be more informed because, you know, there's so many similarities that you talked about in your opening story. You know, I had a teacher. She was my science teacher. She wasn't my English teacher. And I love this lady to death. And basically, you know, she was always on point with, you know, if you are expecting, and she knew back then because, you know, growing up in the 70s, and I'm sure you're not too far off from me. I mean, maybe the 60s, 60s, 70s. But, you know, coming through that elementary, junior high school era during that time, there was still quite a cloud of, you know, stereotypical type of things going on, particularly in the southern states, you know, as it relates to minorities and obviously blacks or people of color. And she would always reiterate to me because there was just no bias for her. She didn't see color or anything like that. She just said, Greg, you know, you want to be successful. You know, I know you have the ambition and the desire and the drive, you're creative and so forth and so on, but you're going to have to work extremely hard to differentiate yourself. And, you know, even back then I kept saying to myself, you know, well, what does that really mean? Have to work extremely hard to differentiate myself. And then later on in life, you discover these type of things, you know, as you say, you know, when you get to a point of, you know, you got to figure out how to max out, you know, what do you fall? Are you the potato, the egg, or the coffee bean?
Right.
You know, and you start to kind of set yourself in your ways. And, you know, throughout my Navy career, the traveling, you know, and the learning, for me, the teachings that I was able to adopt to from seeing others' cultural, others' way of life, and then coming back to the U.S. and realizing how blessed we truly are, was that first eye-opening experience. Despite everything else that had happened, because that first marriage didn't last, you know, that was my eye-opening experience for me. And it kind of set me on the charter that is really kind of groomed me into the person that I am today. And, you know, I'm humbled for that military experience because, you know, a lot of people don't get to take on, you know, those type of, and I'm just going to say adventures. And when you're put into these situations where it requires you to critical think, where it requires you to always understand and trust and have loyalty and respect, I mean, literally out of the gate, doesn't matter if you like the person or not, you've got to figure out how to work with these people because, you know, either they could be taking a bullet for you or they could be saving your ass. You know what I mean? And, you know, a lot of people that have not gone through that, they just can't relate. And, you know, it's kind of a systemic thing that I see even now, which is something that I want to kind of lead into, is with our youth, because, you know, we grew up in a time where you had to respect and obey and listen. I mean, that was part of the upbringing. Like you said, even being surrounded by gang members and being in a gang, I mean, there was a code of honor. So you already had that code of honor before you stepped into the military, that code of honor is what guides you, what kind of puts forth the ethics of what you have to govern yourselves by as you play in the sandbox. And now you know, the kids, they're not there. I mean, it's hard to teach that. It's real hard. And so, you know, I want to kind of dive into a little bit of that because, you know, your body of work right now, which I admire, you know, I'm just a component of that ever since we met. You know, it is so much related to, you know, the next generation. How do we inspire the next generation? How do we get them to understand that what we've endured has only been a step in order to help their salvation and help them grow into something to be better than where we've come from? Because that was the one thing I always aspired with my kids, was the simple fact of saying, you know what, you know, the competition out there from what I've seen all over the world and how China treats their kids and, you know, other nations treat their kids and what's required as a stint of education and so forth and so on. My kids were always like, well, Dad, you know, I don't really know what I want to do. I'm like, in junior high, you're going to start figuring out what you want to know because you're going to get out of the house. You're going to go to school. You have to put yourself in the position, as you've stated, to be better. You have to be able to achieve more in life. Life's not going to fall out of the sky and just say, here it is. That's the BS that we see on IG and all these other social media platforms, which is less than 5% of how people live throughout the world. And it's just heart-wrenching that, you know, these type of things are the educational tools for people. And I think I'm going to stop there and let you talk because, man, I tell you, I'm on a soapbox right now because I'm just passionate about what you're doing. And it's like, you know, I just want to be a component of that to kind of help, you know, facilitate moving young adults and our youth in society in the right direction because they need it.
Right. So I feel like everything rises and falls on leadership. And a lot of times when it comes down to the youth that plays in, like you have kids that play sports, whether it's basketball, football, soccer, and they have that coach. And some of those kids, that's the most influential person they'll ever have in their life.
Right.
And they'll do anything they could for their coach. They'll go above and beyond. And that coach has to figure out how in order to dig into this person's mind in order to get them to perform above their level. And that's my standpoint when it comes down to being where I'm at. So I'm pretty much like a coach to the youth when it comes down to helping them format in their brain that they're not a failure, helping them format in their brain that you are meant to be here, helping them format in their brain that you can be way more and achieve more if you put your best foot forward and give maximum effort. And a lot of times when I ask kids all the time, you say you want to go to college, you got to put in the work.
Right.
A lot of people, a lot of kids, they approach me, they be like, I want to do what you do. And I was like, you sure you want to do what I do?
Because right.
if you want to do what I do, you got to do what I did.
Exactly.
You're willing to do what I did in order to get to where I'm at right now. That's the thing about it. And a lot of kids nowadays, they want it like a microwave on an instant.
Right.
They expect to see instant fame when it's the process. The process is way greater than the product.
Yep.
And they don't realize that throughout that hardship and that time span, that you can gain so much more whenever you're going through the process. And then once you hit that goal or you hit that apex and you realize how much you went through and how much you experienced and throughout the process, all the failures, the hardships, the sacrifices that you experienced,
mm-hmm.
I went through all those and I still made it through, I can do anything.
That's right.
I can overcome anything. I can, and a lot of kids nowadays, they hit a roadblock and then all of a sudden they want to give up. And I'm like, man, did you try going around that roadblock? Did you try going over that roadblock? Did you try going under that roadblock?
Mm-hmm.
No, sir, I didn't. Okay, well, exhort all your means before you just sit there and say, I give up.
Yep. Yep.
And you will not get instant fame. My kids say they want to go to the NFL. I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Hey, you want to go to the NFL? Hey, let's go put in the work.
Yep.
Let's go put in the work. Let's go do what we got to do in order for you to be the best quarterback, running back, whatever you want to be in the NFL. Because once you get there, guess what? You got to stay in there. Your talent will get you in the door, but your character will keep you in the room.
Right. Right. Very, very, very good remarks. I mean, you're so spot on. Definitely with the microwave analogy, because, you know, me running one of my companies, you know, we interview a lot of young talent all the time. And, you know, one story that I'll share with you is, you know, we had a kid that we laid everything out for him and explained it. We went through, I don't know, maybe three interviews with the guy. And we asked him, we said, well, what is it going to take for us to put an offer on the table for you? You know, what type of monetization are you looking for? And I'll tell you, Sylvester, you know, this story still resonates with me because I was in Idaho living at the time. Okay. The kid came back and he says, well, you know, Gregory, and, you know, right there, I'm thinking like, we haven't really become acquainted yet. So I'm like, strike one. He goes, well, I'm going to need about $85,000-$90,000 to come work for your company per year. Wow. And I said to myself, I looked at one of our senior level consultants that were sitting there with me interviewing, and he looked at me and he kind of rubbed his beard. I looked at him and kind of winked my eyes a couple times. And I said to the kid, I said, well, you know what? Thank you very much. We certainly appreciate you popping over here to our office. We'll be in contact with you and, you know, wish you well on your endeavors. And, you know, as the kid was going out the door, he was basically saying, you know, I'll be looking out for that letter, you know, sometime next week, so that I can compare that with some of the other offers I have on the table. And, you know, at that moment in time, you know, the little guy on the shoulder of mine said, you know, you should just probably tell this kid there won't be an offer letter. But obviously, you know, staying professional, I had to basically just say, all right, someone will be in contact with you. But long story short, you know, as I'm sharing this as a part of what we're talking about here, as far as the youth, like you said, you know, you've got to go through the process. You got to go through the experience. You are asking for something of that significant contribution, and you have zero value to bring to the table. Sometimes I say to myself, when these guys are asking for this absurd amount of money, when they, you know, when they don't pass the test, I'm saying to myself, look, we're willing to work with you, but, you know, where you're at from a monetization standpoint is far, far off from where we would like for you to come in at. And then, you know, the thing is you always play devil's advocate. If you decide to give a person a chance for less money, you get them trained up, they decide that they're going to leave, which is something that the youth is basically doing a lot of nowadays anyway, which is kind of jumping ship to find, you know, the more shinier rock. Right. And, you know, I just got to a point to where I say, you know, I'm just not going to do this. And we went back out and we put forth a couple more ads and we changed up our job description. And we said, you know, this is what the job entails. A lot of long hours. You know, you're going to probably work a 16-hour day one week. You may work or 16-hour day one a couple times a week. And then other days you may work 8 hours. You may work 4 hours, you know, a day, you know, per week. And so when we tweaked it a little bit, it started to narrow down the level of what I consider to be who's willing to persevere to go through the process to see what value the process could offer them. We had one guy that survived. One guy. So it's interesting because, like you said, I mean, that process is so, so important. And you're right. I mean, when people say things like, I want to be where you are, I really think it's a little naive to say things like that because they really haven't experienced enough to really understand where that is.
Right.
And that's kind of just, you know, my thinks, my talks on it. So let's kind of fast forward our dialogue here a little bit. You know, you're a self-published author. You've got several books out. Let's kind of talk about what drove you to become an author? I mean, and begin to write and craft and share your story.
Well, absolutely. So Initially starting out writing books, it wasn't never a part of the plan. I promise you now, half the things that I'm doing now was never part of the plan as far as my train of thought and when I was transitioning out of the military. Mm-hmm. What happened was I was going to behavioral health because just dealing with, you know, combat and everything else. I was going to behavioral health and my provider, she asked me, she was like, "Do you journal?" And I said, mm-hmm. "I said no, I don't journal. I always thought journaling was for girls, to be honest with you." Right. So I don't write in diaries. So, you know, I was trying to be a little masculine behind what I said, my comment. But in the process, he said, you should start writing out how you feel and the things that you think about and what you're dealing with and all this stuff. So I was like, man, I'm going to give it a try for about a week.
Right.
And so I gave it a try, started writing, but I noticed I started writing more dealing with in context of advice as far as what I experienced during my time frame in the military, teachings from what I grasped from the Bible, and then just research in general from other books that I read from like John Maxwell, Miles Monroe, mm-hmm. just multiple people, Simon Sinek. Everything that I started researching, learning, and grasping, all that stuff. And I just started writing it down. And as I wrote it down, I gave it to my wife so she can read it. And when she read it, she was like, "Hey, you need to do a book." And I was like, "Man, I'm not finna do a book. I couldn't do no book." You know, I'm speaking from my background, my train of thought, my mindset. I can't do a book. What I look like doing a book? I'm from the hood.
Right.
And so next thing you know, I was like, you know what? I'm going to put this into consideration. And so anytime that you feel confident about something that you're about to pursue, your spouse speak life into it, and then you have a strong confidence that you can possibly do it, you're like, man, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to see what I can do. And so I pitched it to my older brother, who I said was like a father figure to me. And he was like, "Man, you really finna do that?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He was like, "Man, you know," he didn't knock me on it as far as it coming down to it, but it seemed like there was some sense of doubt. Like, you know how some people, they like, they with you, but they're not 100% with you.
Yeah, a little resentment. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, what made you want to do that? And I was like, why not? You know, so, but I did my research, found out everything that I could when it came down to becoming a author in general. And initially I was looking for a publisher. I was mm-hmm. going through and nobody wanted the story. So I was I jumped on YouTube, just so happened to see one of those commercials pop in when I was watching one of my motivational videos from Eric Thomas.
Yep.
He was talking about becoming a self-published author. And I was like, they exist? And so, of course, I clicked on that video. Of course, I signed up for the course. And that's when it all started. So from there, I wrote my first book, A Quick Cure to Successful Leadership. Now, I did not expect this book to sell at all. I just be honest with you. All I was expecting it to do was say, "Hey, I wrote a book."
Yep.
But once it hit the market, it started selling. And I was like, man, this is crazy. And it was so many people that I had encountered throughout my time span in the military. They were like, I always wanted to have a one-on-one with you to pick your brain, to see what your train of thoughts was on leadership. I always admired your leadership style. It was like nothing but respect and love behind it when I published the book, and I sold over 400 copies, and it became a best-selling book on Amazon, which shocked me, but it also inspired me to write another book.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I wanted to speak to more on what we lack or don't speak highly of or give credit to, which is right. Resilience.
Right.
Because resilience is you've experienced it. I've experienced it. You cannot go through life without facing adversity.
Mm-hmm.
But when you face that adversity, how you deal with it,
mm-hmm.
how you react to it, do you let it, if you're not prepared for it, it can break you.
You're right.
Which caused me to write my second book, which is Resilience, the Secret Ingredient, Winning the Battle Within, because we all go through fear. And a lot of times that fear is about what we think and not what other people think.
Yep.
So it prevents us from doing certain things that we would love to do, our dreams, our goals. And also in that book, it went down the lines of telling you tools you can use in order to build that muscle of resiliency to help you face any adversity that you might face in life. Because there's no real manual for it.
That's right.
There's no real manual for it. So I said, I'm going to create a manual, especially for my veterans and also my active duty service member. I think this is the perfect tool for them in order to gain that, to become stronger when it comes down to that setting that they might find themselves in. I have experienced soldiers that have committed suicide, and I myself was on the verge. I had suicide ideation. So I think this was the perfect way to give back to those soldiers who deal with hardship, that don't know how to bounce back from that, mm-hmm. who don't know how to be a coffee bean.
Mm-hmm.
And then my latest book, it's in the works right now. It's in the editing phase right now, which is The Compass. The Compass, I said, leaders change directions, or leaders influence directions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's speaking about how the leader is the compass, and it gives four ways in order to turn a competent manager into a great leader. Because there's a difference between the two, if you ask me.
Right, right.
And I truly feel, this is from my perspective, I truly feel that leaders are made and not born. I feel like everybody have leadership traits.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually key in and build that, you have to work on it daily like a muscle. You have to work on it in order to enhance those skills. Mm-hmm. And so, your mindset is one area that you have to work on. Communication is effective communication is another area you have to work on. And then knowing the difference between the manager and a leader. And I feel like a lot of times when you have organizations, you have this great worker that you feel has a lot of potential to be in a managerial position. But when you stick them in that position, they still working on the same level they were during the time frame before being in that position.
Right.
And sometimes organizations have a lot of demands from other directions, which prevents them from investing in their leaders or who they got in these positions. So this book is like a tool or a guide in order to prevent you from having to go out here and spend multiple dollars in order to invest. You like, hey, I got this great book that you can read. I want you to brush up on these skills. It points out like, hey, these four areas, these seven qualities, these are things that you need. Emotional intelligence. You need to know how to motivate your team. You need to know how to build an effective team.
Mm-hmm.
All these qualities that you, as the leader in this position, that this is our expectation of you. We're promoting you to this position. But due to high demands currently at the moment, we won't be able to teach you all the skills that you need to know. Our expectation is for you to learn, because you as the leader, that's, if you stop learning, you stop growing. You put a lid on yourself. If you put a lid on yourself, you can't grow the leaders up under you. I mean, you can't grow the followers up under you.
That's right.
And your number one job as the leader is to turn followers into leaders.
Correct.
So that's in a nutshell, the books I currently have going on right now at the moment and the subject dealing with all three of them.
Yeah. 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 Certainly appreciate you, you sharing that. And certainly from my perspective, all relatable, all certain things that, you know, as I look back in my career path and growth, there's, like you said, there's tools that I wish I would have had, you know, and unfortunately we had to learn them either on the battleground or had to learn them the hard way. And you know, I think there's a lot to be said when you're able to take that creativity, those thoughts, and pretty much nurture them into a concise book where, like we talked about earlier on, the process of the experience, the process of what we've overcome are the things that you've kind of laid out in words. It's not saying for someone that, hey, you have to avoid or avert the process. It's just saying, this is the process that I went through. These are the nuggets of value of information that we can encourage you to try to deviate and divert yourself from in a manner that's going to help you achieve your goals. Absolutely. And I can certainly get behind that and respect that, and certainly very, very proud of everything that you've done.
Thank you.
So as we're kind of starting to wrap up here a little bit, you know, you've got all these other great, you know, universal blueprints, and I wanna basically kind of talk just a couple minutes in the rise to the top. You know, I mean, you've become a formidable speaker now, and obviously, you know, very motivational in basically talking about the R2T. Right. So let's talk a little bit about that before we wrap up.
Okay. So in 2019, when I initially dropped my first book, I had did a podcast just like now. And in the process of talking to the host, he asked me, have I ever thought about doing motivational, inspirational speaking? Because he read the book prior to, and he thought like the content that was in the book was very motivating and inspiring. But then also after speaking with me, he thought it would be something that's very influential to hear it firsthand compared to just seeing it in a book. Mm-hmm. So in the process of going through trying to figure out exactly if I get into this, what should it be like directed towards, or what should I call it? Mm-hmm. It popped in my head, rising to the top. And it's only because once you hit rock bottom, mm-hmm. there's only one other direction you can go, and that's mm-hmm. to the top, and you got to rise. So I said rising due to the fact that it's a journey. Mm-hmm. You got to go through the process in order to get to the top. There's plenty of room at the top. The only thing about it is, are you willing to rise to go through it? And deal with the hardship, deal with the failures, deal with the struggles, deal with the sacrifices in order to get there. Now, I'm willing to coach you through it. I'm willing to, you know, influence you, motivate you, and inspire you to get there. But how bad do you want it? Mm-hmm. So when I said, I'm gonna call it rising to the top, that was the whole meaning behind it. You've been through hell. I hit rock bottom. I thought I was a failure. I didn't have what it took in order to become anything of where I'm in right now. I said, there's plenty of people who are going through the same thing that I'm going through right now, or went through the same thing that I'm going through right now. Mm-hmm. So why not try to help them out as far as getting to the point that I am, or help them be better than where I'm in, in order to make sure they rise above their situation, make sure they rise above their circumstances, which guided me to speak with the youth and young adults, because they're the next generation. Once we leave, it's on them to have the right perspective, have the right mindset, go in with the right attitude, and go further than they ever thought they could. Because there's some kid right now that's running the streets. There's some kid right now that's out here doing drugs. There's some kid right now that's being influenced by the wrong individuals. And to prevent them from going down that path, or to give them a mindset that I have a choice. Give them a mindset that I can be greater than where I'm at, that I shouldn't put a lid on what I'm thinking about, that I'm not a failure. You can rise above the situation that I'm in. You can't control that you grew up in the ghetto. You can't control that you grew up without a father. You can't control that you're homeless. But guess what? Your start don't have to be your finish.
Right. Right. Yeah, those are powerful words, and certainly, you know, as you stated earlier on, or should I say, as I stated earlier on, you know, no matter what you do, as long as you bet on yourself and put your best foot forward. I mean, if you want to get out of the situation that you're in, you got to put your best foot forward. You've got to apply yourself, as they say. The outcome, as you've stated, you know, earlier on and throughout our dialogue today, the outcome will always be reciprocated in a positive outcome if you bet on yourself, put your best foot forward, and as you've indicated many multitude of times, have the right mindset. So Sylvester, how do people get in contact with you if they want to reach out to you for a speaking engagement? How do they purchase your book? You know, what are some of the things that we can leave with our listeners that are going to be listening to this podcast?
So my books are on Amazon, iTunes, Audible. You can find them on that platform, or you can, if you want to book a speaking engagement, you want to do a podcast or whatever it might be, you can easily go to my website, which is R2T, Rise, R-I-S-E, to the top, at .org.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, certainly we absolutely have appreciated this time with you. And as we close out, are there any final remarks that you'd like to leave with our audience?
Absolutely. To anybody that's listening to this podcast on this day, don't let nobody shortchange you for any dreams or aspiration that you want to pursue. Don't let nobody talk you out of anything that you're striving to be. 2020 is over. It's 2021 in my book and anybody else. December is long gone. It's time for a new change in everything that you do in order to pursue your dreams and goals in life. Use your GPS. And GPS does not, I'm not talking about TomTom, and I'm not talking about your Garmin. I'm talking about having goals, a purpose, and a strategy. Once you know your goals and you understand your purpose and you have a strategy, you can always reach your destination. Don't let nobody talk you out of being the greatest that you are.
Excellent, 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 excellent. And with that, folks, this has been a outstanding, inspiring, compelling. I mean, there's just so many things I could go on and on to describe. Sylvester, I certainly appreciate your time. I'm glad that you and I were able to connect. Much respect for you, my brother. Much, much respect for you and the body of work that you're doing out there. And to all of our listeners, this is Gregory Proctor. This has been episode 55. Max out potatoes, egg, and coffee beans. Take care, everyone. Please be safe. Bye-bye.